The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Thursday, so I'm delighted to welcome back my good friend, Dr. Peter Hammond. Let's bring him up right now. Peter, are you with us?
I am, Andrew.
Excellent. Great to have you on, as always. And folks, we have another topical show for you today. You can't get much more topical than this based upon recent events. The title is "The Real Story of How False Flags Escalate into Wars." So where would you like to start us off today, Peter?
Yes, Andrew. Well, I must say, what an incredible event we've been seeing there with this latest sabotage on the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 pipelines. And economic terror, pipeline terror, ecological disaster. And bearing in mind that we have administrations right now who are talking endlessly about the importance of green energy and speaking against carbon emissions and the fact that you've got to euthanize half the cattle of the Netherlands because they're seriously concerned about methane gas, and there's all kinds of apparent concerns they pretend. This is from the people who jet around the world to climate change conferences in their private jets, and who knows what their carbon footprint is. But nevertheless, the biological disaster, the ecological disaster, the environmental catastrophe caused by we are talking about billions of cubic meters of gas that's been released into the Baltic Sea. Who knows how many deaths this is causing amongst marine animals and vast amounts of fish and sea life, and what the long-term implications of this kind of unprecedented pollution caused by human sabotage, by obviously a military operation. And this is catastrophic. We're talking about first two, and now we know four. There are four leaks. There were explosions, and Swedish seismologists estimate that the power of the explosions reached the equivalent of about 700 kilograms of TNT. And this is pretty serious type of target, because these pipes of the Nord Stream pipelines, Nord Stream 1, Nord Stream 2, both of whom have been sabotaged, they are built with strong steel reinforced concrete, which are so thick and so strong that no natural disaster could damage it. In fact, they're built to withstand impact from even the biggest anchors, even an anchor of an aircraft carrier that might accidentally come there. It would not be able to damage it. These are basically indestructible without serious explosive charges directly on these could possibly cause such damage to these pipes. You know, very thick steel reinforced concrete. How on earth could this happen? Well, bearing in mind these are all at something from 80, 90 to 100 to 120 meters deep. That's very deep. The average scuba diver is operating within range of 20 feet, and I've done scuba diving, and you know, going down to 20 meters is very intense for your average basic trained scuba diver. And to operate at depth of 100 meters under sea level, over 300 feet, you might be needing these specially equipped vehicles that can operate under the ocean, because bear in mind, it's an enormous amount of pressure. And scuba divers, it's not the going down that's a problem, it's the coming up again afterwards. So who has the technical ability to carry out sabotage at those kinds of depths? Who has the equipment, the technical ability, the trained personnel? Because this is not something that some farmer can try to do. This isn't something that the average scuba diver could do. This is extremely sophisticated sabotage. And there's a very short list of countries with the capability of carrying out such an operation. So it's been determined by Danish authorities, the Swedish authorities, this was definitely explosion, this was sabotage, and it's been admitted so across the world, from the Russians, the Germans, the Poles, the British, everyone's admitting, NATO and so on, it was obviously sabotage. There's no natural any event that could explain for these unprecedented four leaks in the Nord Stream pipeline, which is destroying billions of dollars worth of, or should we say billions of rubles or euros worth of gas and equipment. Well, immediately the narrative throughout the Western media, we're talking about the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, the Clinton News Network, Sly Magazine, Useless News and World Report and so on, the lamestream mainstream media have all said, well, obviously Russia's done, this is Putin. Putin is resorting to eco-terrorism and pollution, and he's blown up the pipeline. And that might make sense for a few seconds until you start to think about it for a moment. And the first thing is, why would Russia do that? What could their motive possibly be? It's their pipeline. It's their assets. In fact, Nord Stream provides more money for the Russian Federation every year than the entire military budget of the Russian Federation. So why would they destroy their own assets and their own source of income? Now, we do know that Russia has been using Nord Stream 1 and 2 as leverage in order to put pressure on the EU to not be supporting Ukraine in their war against Russia and the secessionist provinces in the east, where Russians are the majority of the population. So why would he have to blow up his own pipeline? He controlled the pipelines. He could just turn off the valves and turn the taps off, which he had done, in fact, in order to put pressure on the West and drive prices up and so on. So the idea that he had to blow up his pipeline to drive prices up, well, the cost of laying this pipeline was in the billions. This is massive, massive infrastructure, colossal infrastructure, expensive infrastructure, and, of course, very valuable source of income for Russia. And Russia's been getting a huge amount. It's a massive percentage, something like, I think, oil and gas and coal and so on make up something like 40% of the income of the Russian Federation in any given year. So to get rid of his own infrastructure, to sabotage their own infrastructure, to waste a whole lot of their valuable export and natural gas, and to remove their strategic leverage over the European Union and therefore by extension NATO, it doesn't make sense that this would actually help Russia. So the Russian government wants to sell oil and natural gas to the EU, and the EU wanted to buy it from them, but under pressure from America were withholding, and we know that Europe is heading into a serious, very cold and dark winter, because a huge amount of Europe is dependent on a vast amount of gas provided by Russia. So who has the most to gain? Who benefits? Who's responsible for this? Well, many have been harking back to the messages that Joe Biden gave earlier this year. And we might add this woman, Nuland, from the State Department, who was very heavily involved in the Ukrainian coup in 2014 that brought the present administration to power, and which severed Ukraine from the Russian sphere of influence. So who stands to benefit? Well, back in February, Joe Biden and Nuland made statements on TV, which have been played quite a few times since, saying that if Russia invades Ukraine, that'll be the end of Nord Stream 2. And people said, well, how exactly will you bring it about? And Joe Biden smiled and said, don't worry, we'll get it done. We have the means to do that. And so when we suddenly have this incredible picture of this gas bubbling to the surface of the Baltic Sea in this hideous ecological disaster, one of the worst pollution crimes committed in our lifetime. And this is not some natural disaster. This isn't even an oil tanker crashing like the Exxon Valdez on the Pacific coast. This is something which is man-made. And so immediately one's got to think, is this a false flag? Who stands to gain? Do you know that within a day of the blowing up of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, a new Baltic pipeline was opened up, bringing natural gas from the Baltic pipeline, carrying natural gas from Norway to Poland via Denmark, with 10 billion cubic meters able to be flowing through this. Now, this is quite extraordinary, and also the White House was immediately giving sort of smiling, saying, you know, this is too bad, but this is an opportunity. And well, indeed, it is an opportunity. So just looking at a whole lot of interesting things, the former Polish defense minister and the current member of the European Parliament, Radek Sikorski, tweeted immediately after the Nord Stream pipeline was sabotaged, thank you, USA. So that's interesting. There's a lot of people who are assuming that this was done by the United States of America, or a variation by the Polish Navy and Special Forces with the assistance of the United States. And there's a whole lot of interesting facts that come in here. First of all, to understand that Russia wanted Nord Stream 1 and 2 as economic leverage on Europe, on the EU, and also as a means of income, which is paying for their war, amongst other things. So Moscow has lost big time. They've lost their strategic leverage of the EU. They've lost one of their biggest natural exporting means and infrastructure. So Russia's the main loser in this pipeline being blown up. Who's benefiting? Well, the companies involved in the Norwegian enterprise of providing natural gas through Denmark to Poland in particular. And Poland may be benefiting as well. There's a lot of suspicion that the US and Polish Navy could have cooperated in that. But I mean, that's speculation right now. Interestingly enough, the German BND, the German intelligence, is complaining about this, that they were not kept in on the loop on what was going on. This does look like it's an anti-German operation, because Germany benefited the most from the oil natural gas pipeline coming in from Nord Stream 1 and 2. They were benefiting tremendously. Something like 40% of all their energy needs were coming from there. So Germany is one who has suffered. Russia has definitely suffered as an exporter. But who's benefiting? Well, the people who own this Norwegian pipeline and the Americans who've been trying to get Europe more dependent on them and less dependent on Russia. So this is something like a declaration of war against Germany and against businesses and citizens of the European Union. And it has much weakened Russia's leverage over the people of Europe, of EU and NATO. And, of course, people like Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the European Commission, she's, of course, quite thrilled about any opportunity that can advance the war, strengthen NATO's position, and not have people wandering off and buying any energy from Russia or strengthening them. Now, interestingly, the Polish people seem to be the most involved in wanting to have war with Russia. And Poland has had a far more aggressive approach. And a lot of people in Europe don't want that to take place. And there's massive protests going on, for example, in the Czech Republic, with tens of thousands of people on the streets protesting against any more sanctions, any more involved in the war, any more sending in military aid to Ukraine. And it's seen as a no-win war. Why are we going to do this? But look at the timing. The Baltic pipeline opens up the day after the blowing up of the Russian Nord Stream 2. Extremely suspicious. Very, very strange. It has been documented that American helicopters were overflying the sabotage areas just a few days before. And United Kingdom research vessel was loitering in the Danish waters since mid-September, interestingly enough. And NATO tweeted about testing of new unmanned systems at sea on the same day of the sabotage. Der Spiegel published a startling report headlined CIA warned German government against attacks on Baltic Sea pipelines. That could be a clever ploy for plausible deniability. Oh, well, you know, we did warn him that something like this might happen. And the Russian Foreign Ministry gave a pretty sharp response saying this incident took place in an area controlled by American intelligence. And that's true. It's just beyond the waters of Denmark and Sweden. It's in international waters, but firmly in the Western NATO-controlled hemisphere. And after all, why would Russia need to blow up their own pipeline so far from their own area when all they had to do was turn off the taps, which they have done a few times this year right now anyway? And then you have Joe Biden claiming that we will not allow Nord Stream to work and that, in fact, Nord Stream would be finished. And he emphasized that if the Russians invaded Ukraine. So the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov gave a bit of a dose of reality. The damage to the pipelines posed a huge problem for Russia because they were losing the gas supply routes to Europe. And both of the Nord Stream lines had been full of gas and were prepared to deliver it to Europe because at the very moment that it blew up, Germany and Russia were in negotiations on how to reopen Nord Stream 2 for Germany. And so it would seem, bear in mind that the gas is very expensive and they had just lost a vast amount of export energy. And neither Russia nor Europe actually has anything to gain from the sabotage. And Germany, of course, stands to lose the most, and Russia as well. And so this pipeline terrorism seems to be part of what's been called the Straussian strategy. Leo Strauss and the conservative movement in America, a critical appraisal, was published by Cambridge in 2011 and by Paul Gottfried. And Leo Strauss is a German Jewish philosopher who taught at the University of Chicago. And he's at the root of what became the Wolfowitz Doctrine, written in 1992 as a defense planning guidance, which defined America's mission in the post-Cold War era. That the Wolfowitz Doctrine goes straight to the point. Any potential competitor to American hegemony, especially advanced industrial nations such as Germany and Japan, very specific, must be smashed. Europe should never achieve sovereignty or exercise sovereignty. And so the United States must be careful to prevent the emergence of a purely European security system, which would undermine NATO, which, bear in mind, is not just Western Europe, but it's North America too, Canada and the USA. And so a key thing is to make sure Europe doesn't become self-sufficient, but it's always needing North American support. And so especially the integrated military command structure, I'm all quoting. So if you come to the Ukraine Democracy Defense Lend-Lease Act that was adopted just 5 months ago, Kiev gets a free lunch. If people think that they are getting all these weapons and money directly from America, that's not so. All these expensive weapon systems from America are being leased to the EU to be sent to Ukraine. So the fact is, while America is not actually giving these things to Ukraine, they're lending them to Europe, and Europe or the EU and NATO must repay America. So basically, the EU and NATO are paying the bills for this massive transfer of weaponry and funds to Ukraine. And this is why, in many ways, what we've just seen with the sabotage is actually, it's a war against Europe, not just against Russia, but all of Europe. And it's an economic war as well as a military war. So the United States Secretary of State Blinken and Victoria Nuland hold to the Straussian philosophy, and they are taking advantage of this void in the White House where you've got this chap who reads the teleprompter every now and then, but he's not the decision maker. And there's about three different silos of power in a fractured Washington, they're pointing to. And for the Straussians, the tight bipartisan op, which includes the war hawks in the Republicans and, of course, the Democrats, who always love overseas wars, and it really does bolster the military-industrial complex and the people behind that sort of thing. So the goal here is to destroy Germany. And Germany was developing a working relationship with Russia, which, of course, has been seriously undermined now by the pipeline terror, because Russia was providing most of Germany's energy. And so here there has been a campaign by these so-called Straussians to make sure they undermine Germany and Japan if necessary, and to avoid Europe ever becoming self-sufficient and able to manage energy or any other way without the aid of North America, to keep them dependent. And so there are people within the Beltway in America, we're talking about Washington, D.C., they often speak of inside the Beltway, speaking about the Beltway of highways around Washington, D.C., that the CIA does not agree with this particular strategy. Interestingly, the Langley CIA agenda is to force the Straussians to back off on Russia and let Russia reincorporate Novorossiya or the Donbass regions, where Russians are the majority anyway, and allow Poland and Hungary to gobble up whatever they want in Western Ukraine before letting the entire Ukraine government fall into a black void, because they don't see that Ukraine's worth holding together. It consists of too many minority groups, which are majorities in certain sections, and that the boundaries don't make sense, and let Ukraine have secessionist movements and not worth us fighting. Well, that's a CIA view, but that's not the military view, and that's not the view of the NIS or of the other Straussian elements in the US government. So that's a theory. So right now, what the general information is that's coming out is that this is a false flag operation carried out by the US government, although there are dissidents within American deep state who don't think this is a wise strategy and that this is going to lead to a tremendous winter of discontent, and that it could have all kinds of blowback, unintended consequences. But basically speaking, what we are seeing here is Europe is being set up for a fall, a major, major, major fall. What we've just seen with this eco-terrorism from the hypocrites who tell us that we mustn't drive SUVs or we can only have electric cars and so on because of concern for the planet and gas emissions and so on, they've just committed one of the worst eco-terrorism acts and pollutions imaginable right in the Baltic Sea. And negative effects of this are going to be felt for a very long time to come. But what we're seeing is a war against Russia and Germany and Eurasian, Europe and Asian powers right now. And we can't imagine Russia taking this lying down. And they are very well equipped with nuclear weapons. They might even be the best equipped country with nuclear weapons in the world right now, certainly with tactical nukes. So when we look at this false flag, and we can see false flags escalating to wars, it should just remind us that back in 1964, National Security Agency of America organized the Gulf of Tonkin incident, manipulating the data to make it look like North Vietnamese patrol boats had fired on U.S. battleships, which would be awfully foolish. Sort of like mice attacking elephants. I mean, why would you have little patrol boats attacking massive battleships? But anyway, that was the justification for American involvement in the Vietnam War. And we all know that on the 8th of June, 1967, unmarked Israeli fighter jets and unmarked torpedo boat attacked the USS Liberty off the coast of Egypt with cannon fire, napalm, rockets, torpedoes. And they started by jamming the ship's emergency distress signals. They targeted the communications of the ship. They prevented the Americans from radio for help. They attempted to destroy all chance of people surviving by destroying the life rafts as well. So they're systematically to try and destroy everybody on board the Liberty. And this was meant to be a false flag operation to get America to declare war on Egypt, because they were trying to blame Egypt for this. But 34 crewmen were killed, 174 wounded, and it was quite clear that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas Moore, he, a year after investigating the incident, concluded that America was involved in this attempted sinking of the USS Liberty. that both the American government and Israeli government were working to attempt to blame Egypt for the attack to persuade America to join in on their attack on Egypt. And Lyndon Johnson actually dispatched nuclear-armed fighter jets to drop nuclear bombs on Cairo, Egypt, and only recalled when it was exposed that it was the Israelis, not the Egyptians, who had fired on the USS Liberty. I mean, that's just one example of a false flag. In that case, it went bad. A Turkish general admitted that Turkish forces burned down a mosque on the island of Cyprus. And now we're talking about the 1970s, in order to blame it on the Greek Christian enemy. And he explained, in special ways, certain acts of sabotage were staged and blamed on the enemy to increase public resistance. We did this in Cyprus. We even burned down mosques. So you can see there's been all sorts of attempts at false flags. For example, 1984, a Mossad agent admitted that in 1984, Israeli agents planted a radio transmitter in Gaddafi's compound in Tripoli, in Libya, which broadcast fake terrorist transmissions in order to frame Gaddafi as a supporter of the anti-American terrorism, which they had sponsored themselves, and to convince American President Ronald Reagan to bomb Libya. There's been all sorts of other examples. Take the Algerian diplomats and several officers of the Algerian army who admitted that in the 1990s, the Algerian army frequently massacred Algerian civilians to blame it on opponents of the state. And an Indonesian fact-finding team investigating the violent riots which occurred in 1998 determined that elements of their own military were involved in instigating the riots, some of which were deliberately provoked in order to justify new legislation, new powers for themselves. There's been many deception operations, and you can take, for example, when British Prime Minister Harold Macmillan admitted that both he and American President Dwight Eisenhower in 1957 approved a CIA MI6 plan to carry out attacks in Syria, blaming it on the Syrian government to effect regime change. And the former Italian Prime Minister, Italian judge, and former head of Italian counterintelligence admitted NATO, with the help of the Pentagon and the CIA, carried out terror bombings in Italy and other European countries in the 1950s in order to rally their people's support for their governments in Europe. We attacked civilians, people, women, children, innocent people, unknown people, far removed from any political gain. The reason was quite simple. They were supposed to force these people, the Italian public, to turn to the state and ask for greater security. And so NATO and the CIA organized terror attacks in Italy, France, Belgium, Denmark, Germany, Greece, Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, United Kingdom, and other countries in the 1950s, specifically, I think they called it Operation Gladiator. And these are just some of the false flags that have happened over the years. And the CIA admitted in the 1950s to hiring Iranians to pose as communists and stage bombings in Iran to turn the country against their elected prime minister. So there are false flag operations. I mean, we can talk about everything from the Great Fire of Rome under Nero to the Manchurian incident in 1931, where the Japanese organized terrorism on one of their own trains in Manchuria. I think this would have been just coming out of Manchuria into Korea, and they call it the Manchurian incident to justify the war with China. And there's a lot we could say about Pearl Harbor as well, and the prior knowledge, but that's a big event as well. There's the British government admitted that between 1946 and 48, they set up a fake group called the Defenders of Palestine, who falsely claimed responsibility for bombings, where the British bombed 5 ships transporting Jews from Europe to Palestine, and they set up the opposition to blame, even though they were doing it themselves, for their own purposes, in order to justify more support for Israel and for the Jewish taking over of Palestine and displacing the Palestinians there at that time. So there's a lot. Nikita Khrushchev admitted that the Soviet Union's Red Army shelled the Russian village of Manila in 1939 to blame the attack on Finland as a pretext for launching their winter war against Finland. And Boris Yeltsin, later Russian president, confirmed Russia had been the aggressor in the winter war, and the shelling of Main Ila was a false flag operation. We could go to the Oklahoma bombing of 1995, the creating chaos in 2014 Ukraine. Ukrainian officials admitted that Ukrainian snipers were hired to fire on both sides to create maximum chaos to lead to the Ukrainian coup of 2014, which brought this present administration to power. So there are all kinds of false flag operations, and it's been proven now. For example, the Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist Seymour Hersh published an expose revealing the Turkish government carried out the chemical weapons attacks blamed on the Syrian government of Assad. And although Turkey is a member of NATO, Turkey provided the sarin chemical weapons, and the US President Barack Hussein Obama actually attempted to use this as the pretext for launching Americans on a full-scale war against Syria. And high-level US intelligence officials since confirmed it was the American and Turkish-backed rebels, not the Syrian government, who carried out the chemical weapons attacks. But most of the world's population would not know about the refutations. They just remember the headlines that blamed the Syrian government for these chemical weapon attacks, which were later found out to be false flag operations. So we could even talk about 9/11. There's a whole lot of people who have spoken of that. But just take David Steele, a former US Marine and CIA agent. He said most terrorists are false flag terrorists or created by our own security forces. In the United States, every single terrorist incident we have had has been a false flag, or it has been an informant pushed on by the FBI. In fact, we now have citizens taking out restraining orders against FBI informants that are trying to incite terrorism. We have become a lunatic asylum. The British Foreign Secretary, Robin Cook, declared, the truth is there. He said, we know that Al-Qaeda and ISIS and so on, any informed intelligence officer knows that these are propaganda campaigns made to believe, get the public to believe in the presence of an intensified entity representing the devil, only in order to drive TV watchers to accept a unified international leadership for a war against terrorism. But the country behind this propaganda is the United States. Terrorism has replaced communism as the rationale for the militarization of America, for military adventures abroad, for the suppression of civil liberties at home. It serves the purpose of creating hysteria. And there are many other exposés on how we can see global criminal enterprises, globalists who want a new world order, a one world government, who are organizing false flags in order to stampede people into a prearranged solution, which is going to take away more civil liberties and result in greater instability and more opportunity for great reset for a one world government, one world economic system, one world interfaith religion. So yes, there's no doubt about it. We are seeing there are false flags, which are there to manipulate minds of the people and in order to lead into war. And unfortunately, this is the thing. There is a deceiving into war, and terrorism prepares the way. The easiest way to gain control of a country is to carry out acts of terror. The public will clamor for such laws if their personal safety is threatened. And who said that? Joseph Stalin. Joseph Stalin himself said the easiest way to gain more control of the country is to perpetrate false flag terrorist attacks on your own people, so they plead to you for protection and support. And it just seems incredible, though, that we've got such hypocrisy, that the people who talk about peace are inciting war, that the people who claim to be concerned about the environment are creating some of the worst environmental terrorism and pollution and crisis imaginable. So this is where we are. We are needing to understand the real story of how false flags escalate into wars. And here we are possibly on the brink of a third world war. I pray by God's grace that it does not happen. But there is no doubt there are people hell-bent, literally hell-bent, on driving Europe into war. And I would say that this Nord Stream sabotage is plainly a false flag terror operation. It's a severe blow against the economy of Russia and the economy of Germany. And it's designed to set up Europe to fall, to fail, to head into a winter of discontent such as Europe has probably never seen before, probably not since 1945. So in our lifetimes, this could be one of the worst things coming. It's a perfect storm that's been created by the wars, the Great Reset, the economic suicides, the war against farmers, the war against food, the war against our individual liberties, and now energy, because without cheap, reliable energy, civilization and industry is basically impossible. And so we need to be very aware of what's going on here, the people behind it, and what their agenda is. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, did you get the chance to listen to Vladimir Putin's speech, where he literally came out and he talked about the LGBTQ agenda in the West and how ridiculous it was, and they wouldn't accept that being done to their people, and there's no respect for, you know, any countries throughout the world that will not go along with this so-called liberal agenda of the West. And he also went as far as to call people running these countries Satanists. Did you catch any of that at all?
I got a good part of his speech, but not all of it. And yes, some of that I heard directly from his presentation, the translation of it. Pretty impressive.
Yes, I felt the same way. It's interesting because it's very... I mean, we've covered, for example, the 9-part series we did on M.S. King's book, The Bad War, about Hitler. And then you could look at things like Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. But then there'll be other people out there who will also point out areas where, oh, well, Hitler did work with the bankers, and Hitler did essentially have an involvement in the creation of Israel with there's even a book I referred to actually a couple of weeks ago that you can get called Adolf Hitler, Father of Israel, because of course his deal with the Zionists was to send Jews over to Palestine to kind of give them population, because I believe that country, when you look back historically, it was kind of the brainchild of the Rothschild family. I've even got a quote somewhere. I think it was Edmund de Rothschild who was most involved. It's something like, I created the Yishuv I alone, and I will decide, you know, whatever. I forget the exact quote. I can remember that part of it. But it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, and you can get yourself a country. You don't have a country unless you have a population, because you need people to obviously, you know, work in the country and run the country and give you a military and all these sorts of things. So I'm not trying to say that Adolf Hitler was part of some conspiracy, but I find myself in a difficult position these days because let's obviously some things that he did, you can argue, did benefit the formation of Israel, you know, in the present day. And then you'll have other people, you know, talking about the Holocaust and how this was dreadful. And, you know, that's something that we don't need to go into views on that, because, of course, there were very difficult to express views on that in Europe. But when you look at a Putin situation, now people are saying that the things he says, and I want to be able to listen to what he says and be encouraged by it. But there are other people that are saying, well, obviously the strategy is to... They've talked about starving the West and all the energy prices and all these different things. We heard about Dark Winter for quite a period of time. And there are elements that he's doing, and he will argue that he's been forced into this position because of sanctions and what have you. And I certainly don't agree that he blew up his own pipeline. But certain things that he does seems to move forward the World Economic Forum's plan to essentially, I believe, target white people and get rid of as many of them as they can. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, bear in mind, this is a key strategy of the left, is to try and provoke you into action. So it's in fact part of the Hegelian dialectic: thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. So that what you do is you have the action, then you have the reaction, and the result of it is what they were looking for in the first place. So you can set a person up for something. So for example, you can provoke. Let's say you keep taunting a person, pushing a person, tripping him up, so on. After a while, he loses temper, he turns around, he hits you. And then you say, I'm a victim, I've been assaulted, and so on. And so that's an example where you're set up for something where the goal was, and any schoolboy who's been bullied knows how that can work, that you end up after being provoked for weeks and months, and you finally react, and now you're the one who's in the principal's office and you're in trouble. And that happens also in war. It happens in economics. And the communists are past masters is how to set up the situation where you are forced into what is essentially what you think is self-defense. And you either react or overreact. But the fact still is they were prodding, they were pushing. And people have been spoken about prodding the bear and provoking. So, you know, for example, when they used to have this horrible bear baiting, and they'd bring the bears out and apparently this happened in the Middle Ages, and shocking thing, people could be so callous, but you can't complain if at some point the bear turns around and gives you a whack with his paw, because they can only be goaded so much, and everyone's got their limits. So the Marxists and their fellow travelers specialize in how to provoke. We saw this in South Africa and Rhodesia frequently as we were fighting for our freedoms, that it didn't matter how much terrorism and how much provocation our people put under, the media would only report the reaction, except they wouldn't give you the context. So it would look like, oh, these horrible, brutal, white supremacist, racist South Africans or Rhodesians or whatever have done this. And meanwhile, they completely leave off the context and what happened before it. If I can put it this way, if anyone's seen the Dirty Harry movies, if you just showed a clip of here's this policeman standing on a football field and shooting a man who's already injured in one leg, in his other leg, so he falls to the ground and walking over and stepping on his injured leg while he screams in agony, you would say police brutality. But if you knew the context, that this is a kidnapper who has somebody who is going to die of lack of oxygen in a couple of hours unless they can find this person, and this policeman's trying to rescue the person who's been kidnapped, well, that puts the whole different look on it when you know that context. And this is the point. The media today don't tell you about the provocations. They don't focus on the provocations. They just give the reactions, and then they blame the victim. Isn't that just wonderful? They villainize the victims, and they victimize the villains. Back to you, Andrew.
Yes, very well stated, Peter. And it reminded me, there's a lady you may have heard of called Alison Chablot in the UK, and she's been to jail on at least a couple of occasions now because she wrote songs which satirized some of the rather unbelievable Holocaust survivor accounts. The first one that comes to mind is Irene Zisplat, who claimed to have eaten diamonds each day and then passed them out through the other end, shall we say, during her imprisonment at one of the concentration camps. That doesn't sound a particularly true story to me, but Alison wrote a song satirizing that. And as a result, that was one of the things that she got locked up for doing. But the reason that I mention it isn't in the context of what she was essentially sentenced to prison for having said in a country where we're told we have the democratic right to free speech. It's because before any of this happened and she started writing her songs, she'd been expressing an interest in World War II history, in particular those people who question the official narrative of the Holocaust. And as a result, because she only came to my attention when she was doing these songs, but I think that she'd been active on places like Twitter, and she was getting all sorts of very serious abuse and threats on Twitter that she had to report to the police. And this is what she told me on a radio show. But it turned out all the reports that she made to the police, she'd phone them up and they'd say things like, and this is what she said to me, the sergeant's left now, so that case isn't going anywhere. And it's like, well, no, that's not true. Okay, I've been a police officer and I've had to take on when someone's either left, generally they've gone to another station or they've been transferred to a unit or something, and if they're a PC like I was, then their work that's unfinished will get doled out against the rest of the squad or what have you. And of course, it's never a great deal of fun having to, you know, carry on where someone else has left off when they've got their system and you've got yours. But that is how it works. You don't have someone leave and all crimes that have been reported to them, oh, they just go away. And so if what Alison was telling me was correct, then it's very clear that there's been corruption at that level in order to not investigate what was done to her, but only investigate what these people claim she did to upset them by singing songs. So I wanted to raise that story because that's exactly what you were talking about how you're constantly harassed. I mean, she was getting catalogues delivered to her door addressed to Mrs. Holocaust Denier.
You know,
So these people were just going round and you know, just doing things like this. It's just disgraceful behaviour, to be quite honest. People should be allowed to have an opinion and not be harassed for it. She clearly was, and that was about the least of it from what I heard was happening to her on Twitter, that the British police chose not to investigate. Yet they were quite happy to investigate her for singing a satirical song about a Holocaust account that sounds absolutely ridiculous. What are your thoughts on the way you touched upon security services? Most terrorists are actually working for the security services, which are employed by, you know, governments throughout the world, like my government and your government and the American government and what have you. When it's got to such a stage now that some people get the law working for them and some don't, I just think that Putin's absolutely right, that this country and the West largely is controlled by Satanists, and it's gone right down to, as I say, the one rank above a police constable was a sergeant. And according to Alison, it was a sergeant that was supposed to have left. And so as a result, her case wasn't being pursued. So if you've got that just one rank above the most basic police officer you can be, you can't say, well, it's some senior guy at the top that's doing it all. It's gone right down to that low level. What sort of state do you think that the West is in morally when these sort of things are happening?
The West at the moment's moral levels at the cesspool pervert level, way below that of crime gangs and pimps. They are lower than that. And the West has no real moral foundation to speak on these days. When you travel around the Third World, which I do a lot, the people are aghast. In fact, in Africa, the moral respectability of Europe and the Americas is shattered, particularly since you've had people like Obama coming to Africa in 2013, lecturing everyone on the most important thing in the world right now is to legalize homosexual marriages and the whole LGBT agenda. And since then, it's been gender confusion, and that men should be able to go into women's changing rooms and enter women's sports. And this kind of nonsense, I mean, those are just some of it. But you can imagine the average African is not impressed with this. And I know from my friends in Pakistan and India and so on, they're just aghast that has the West completely lost their mind? This is insane. You will not convince the average African or Indian or Pakistani and so on, for example, of the fact that a man can be a woman and should be allowed to take part in women's sports and should be allowed to walk into women's changing rooms and things like this. And children in primary school should be indoctrinated with the sexual perversions and in the name of sex education, or that you should mutilate children in the name of gender affirming care and literally be castrating and mastectomies and cutting off body parts and all of this to youngsters who are not old enough to drive, are not old enough to vote, but they can decide on these sort of things. And they're often being talked into it by people for who knows what reasons. And you can now hear these heartrending testimonies of children whose lives have been destroyed, who've been bodily mutilated, and now they're regretting. And they said, you know, they were feeling low and down, and then they saw all the huge amounts of attention and euphoria and affirmation and support and media coverage they'd get if they would be a transgender, for example. And, you know, I mean, kids experiment with things, but this is not like a bad hairstyle that you can change or grow out of in a few months. These are things that they can never reverse. And here you've got kids bodily mutilated in the West, and this is going insane. Right now, do you know that the United States military is complaining that they are very short of staff? They don't have enough soldiers. Of course, they've lost a whole lot of soldiers through forcing those who wouldn't take the jab to leave, firing those who would not subject themselves to a mandatory medical malpractice under the salvation by vaccination nonsense. But now they've even been offering that, join the army and we will cover your expenses for gender changes, for trans operations. And would you believe it? They're not getting enough volunteers. But this is the kind of insanity. Now, people can see Russia and China, for example, are producing very professional armies of very dedicated soldiers who obviously are training how to kill you. And then you see the West's ridiculous adverts for recruitment, how, you know, I had two mothers and I've always been involved in fighting for civil rights, and I'm a trans, non-binary, this, that, and the other, and come join the CIA, you know, you'll find very tolerant of. And it's all about gender politics and, well, whatever happened to be all you can be and to be able to fight to defend your country and kill the enemy? And what kind of defense does the West have when they are continually undermining their own armies with all this gender confusion and the correct pronouns and so on in a war? That's not going to help you win the war, but it sure will help you lose the war. So plainly, the West being run by idiots or by people with the most evil intentions to destroy it from within. And so I think that's why when Europe started their crusade against Russia recently and they were asking for people to join them in it, the entire Third World was uninterested. And from India onwards, it was like, this is your war. And so the only boycotts in Russia is coming from Western Europe and North America. The rest of the world is just not interested. Third World is saying, don't lecture us about morality. You, the people who invaded, bombed, and destroyed Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, you're trying to destroy Syria. You did how much bombing of the people in Serbia. Don't lecture us about morality and international law and respect for sovereignty. What if Obama bombed 8 different countries, killed over 100,000 civilians during his time with drone strikes and so on, gets a Nobel Peace Prize for it. And so, yes, I must say the people in Africa that I deal with on a regular basis are not impressed, and they don't even give the time of day. They're not interested. Nobody's interested in listening to the moral lecturing and these posturing and posings of the Kamala Harris's and so on, let alone the Boris Johnson's and all of those either. They're not interested. They just think the West are a bunch of hypocrites and perverts, and they've got no moral authority, and they can't even tell the difference between a man and a female. They can't even define what a woman is. So, yes, back to you, Andrew.
Yes, and I'd just like to close off my comment with what I see the audience of this show as being is an extremely moral audience. And so when they find situations where, you know, they might not, they're being told they're haters because they don't accept this, that and the other that they've never been given the opportunity to vote on. You look at the response to like a Daily Mail article about a teacher who is put in prison because he won't call a child by their preferred pronoun. And it's overwhelmingly, this is disgraceful, what's happening here. We don't want this. And that's why you don't vote on it, because they want to give this to you and they want you to have this. And on the basis of what Peter said about the American military, well, again, it's obvious that they're trying to destroy the American military. They know the vaccines are dangerous, and they're firing people who won't take them, and now they're promoting all these lifestyles that aren't really things that you would expect to go hand in hand with the military fighting force. I think some time ago we played the Chinese and the Russian military commercials compared with the American one about some woman marrying her girlfriend. And the difference was quite stark. So I think I'll leave that there. Peter, can you just let the audience know where they can find your work and how they can contact you?
Yes, thank you very much. My personal email is peter@frontline.org.za. peter@frontline.org.za. And our website, www.frontlinemissionsa.org. frontlinemissionsa.org. And of course, we're also on social media.
Thank you, Peter. So, folks, you have been listening to a show entitled The Real Story of How False Flags Escalate into Wars. I'm hoping to have Peter back with us again next week. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful day, and bye.